Come on, bitch, let's go. Come on, get ready, bitches. Guys, I just wanted to say, did you have the best week? I hope you did. I have had such a unique opportunity in becoming friendly with someone you may have heard of. Her name's been brought up in the media several times related to Todd Chrisley and Julie Chrisley and their son, Kyle. She is a really lovely person, and I think I can't wait for you to meet her yourself. She is a single mom. She was married to Kyle Chrisley. She has a young daughter, not from Kyle, and she's just so great. And she's just, I can't wait for you to meet her. So I'm going to bring her into the show, and we're going to be talking about Julie Chrisley and Todd Chrisley and sort of some of her takes on all of this. And I'm going to let her share a little of herself with you and tell her story in a more robust way, because in the past, you know, she's been used to sort of sensationalize different things in the tabloids and about people. And I felt like, gosh, you know, I'd like to hear from her directly, like in a more profound manner than we have in the past. So I begged her to come on the show and she did. And I'm so excited for you guys to meet Lexi Wilby.
Need help?
You can't offer me the help that I need.
I'm not, I don't know.
This right here is beyond couch time.
We're not perfect.
But perfect should be something you should strive to be.
Gotta risk it to get the biscuit.
Hey, hi, Dana. What a wonderful intro. Thank you. I'm excited to be here. And you have a great, sweet heart. And I just like talking to you and getting to know you more. And I'm happy to be on your show.
Thank you so much. Well, I'm really excited to have you because, you know, I like to do the deep dive. I'm known for it. And I was like, gee, they only lightly talk about you in regards to these. Like, I feel like sometimes the media uses you a little bit like, oh, we need like that take or that's like a sensationalized story. And I just felt like, okay, let's like get a bigger picture here of you in life. You know, I mean, go on.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so first of all, let's establish who you are a little bit better than has been established maybe in the past, okay? Why don't you tell me a little bit about how you got involved with the Chrisley family? How did that come about?
Yes, Kyle and I, we have mutual friends. Actually, he was dating or his best friend was dating a girlfriend of mine way back in high school. And we actually reconnected on social media. We didn't formally know each other directly, but we knew each other through friends. So that's how it all started. We got together around 21. I was 21, at least, and he was also 21. And we kind of just hit it off. It was crazy. Like we had our friends that we hung out with together, but we kind of took it one-on-one and just got close really quickly. This was all before the show though. So that's what a lot of people don't know. So there was no show. There was no talk of the show. We were just getting to know each other. Now, with all the history of his drug abuse and mental health issues, all of that was a lot more under control, I would say, when I met Kyle initially. So I had no idea of his addiction or mental problems because he was just sweet and nice and caring and with his grandmother. And yeah, it was a great beginning. And I didn't actually meet Todd and Julie until a few months after we've been dating. So it was something where he and I had our own beginning without all the drama.
And what year about was this? Do you know? Do you remember?
Yes, this was in 2013, early 2013.
Oh gosh, you were so young. 21 years old. Oh my gosh, you're so young. Oh, you've been through a lot. Jeez.
I feel like we definitely grew up fast.
Okay. So now how does the show come about? Because that's interesting that he didn't have the show on the horizon at that time.
Yeah, good question. So about I would say like a few weeks into Kyle and I dating, he mentioned, hey, we did a sizzle reel, like a pilot for this show a while back. We haven't heard anything back, but we kind of did a preview, like almost like a sizzle. So I guess it was like a 15-minute snippet of some scenes. I didn't really know how the process worked, and I don't think he really knew, but nobody heard back until around August of that year, I would say. So August of like 2013 was when they got word back. So that's how it happened. It really was like when they say celebrity overnight.
Lexi, let me go ahead and play the early season teaser for USA Network for Chrisley Knows Best. Boy, did this not age well, but I think it's going to be good for everyone to hear to be sort of refreshed with the earlier season characters because you're going to talk about it.
Well, you just think you're all that in a bag of chips and some more.
I'm breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and dessert twice a week.
She goes from Virgin Mary to Stripperella. We need to find a happy medium.
Objects you were caught even smoking a cigarette with your brother, Thug Wannabes.
All oxygen was cut off to your brain at the time that you did that.
Well, everyone has their own opinion, and I don't like it.
But we don't have to agree. If I don't like it, that's all that matters.
Okay, Daddy.
We're the Chrisleys, Todd and Julie Chrisley.
We live in a neighborhood north of Atlanta, a gated neighborhood with celebrities here. We live with Sharon and Chipper Jones. We live with, Usher. We grew up in a very small rural town, and now our main home is 30,000 square feet.
Todd is very controlling.
I try to keep everything in order and in line. I have a certain level of expectation for my children, for my wife, for myself.
And you have to let him think he's the boss, and that's okay.
Okay. I've made 95% of all the money that we've ever made in real estate. And I'm actually going to now be able to do something that I have always wanted to do my entire life, which was to have a life in fashion. This is my closet. Things are organized by season. Something that's not right here, and this should not be here. In a year, we probably spend $300,000, sometimes more, just on clothing. I approve every piece of clothing that our children wear.
Her shorts are too big. They need to be smaller.
Smaller or larger, they still look like ass.
Okay, Daddy. Thank you very much.
Chrisley & Company is a department store that we're branding after our family. It's not just apparel. It's a lifestyle brand. There's a lot of ego involved with Chrisley & Company. Not that I have one, but...
Oh, my God.
Got glass fronts and entrances and parking on both sides. And the buildings for sale is $5.4 million.
We're investing a lot of money in this new business. About 35% of our net worth. Scares the hell out of me.
But, when we started, we had nothing.
But do you want to go back to that?
No.
My form of parenting is entirely different than Julie's form of parenting. I need to know where our children are at all times. So when I buy them a car, there is a tracking device.
Todd assumes, you assume that kids are all liars.
You really think that when Chase tells me at 16 years old, oh, I'm going to bed at 8:30? Bull. He's going to look at porn or doing something he's not supposed to be doing. So I monitor all of the computer traffic. Oh my God. Chase! Really? I had this computer taken from you,
but you won't get it again.
It's going to be Todd's way or the highway because at the end of the day, he who has the gold rules. Yeah. I have the gold. They don't.
What are you doing? What in the hell is wrong with you?
We have 5 children.
Our oldest daughter is Lindsay. Lindsay is beautiful. She's smart. She's bitchy.
Bitch, get out of my face.
No, get out of my face.
Your dress is almost to your vagina.
Oh my God, you're so freaking annoying. Just go.
No.
She married Will without my permission and without a prenup. But I love my grandson, Jackson.
If I can love you, eventually I will love your daddies.
What?
So are you going to go play?
Do you love your playground? Do you love your life?
Yeah. Our youngest is Grayson, and he is the love of my life.
This is our playroom!
Entitlement.
Hereditary.
Okay. Savannah is 15, and Savannah looks like she's 20.
Oh, my God. You look like a young version of Pamela Anderson.
Well, that's what I'm striving to be.
You can take that off, because that's not going to happen.
Savannah is competing in pageants.
Not so seductive. This is not a runway in a strip joint.
Sometimes you don't have to be so brutally honest.
I would rather...
Just because somebody says, I want your honest opinion, does not mean they really want your honest opinion.
But I'm going to give you my honest opinion. And it's my child.
His standards are very high.
Kyle has certainly been our child that doesn't march to anyone else's beat other than his own.
I just feel like I need to get away for a little bit and get myself together.
I have spent over $1 million trying to help you find yourself. I can't keep funding all of these things that you want to do when you will not see any of them through. When I caught Kyle cheating with a married woman, I had his ass picked up by two private security guards. He was taken to the private airstrip here in Atlanta, and he was sent to Samoa for 9 months to do Red Cross relief work. You servicing the community is not the kind of community service you need to be involved in. And then I get to thinking, well, have I created this? I mean...
Yes, you have, because you want to control everything.
No, I don't want to control stupid.
Well, no, not control stupid.
Ignorance I can fix. Stupid's forever. I love my businesses, but I place nothing above my wife and my children. I make millions of dollars a year, but we still have the same issues that parents who are making $40,000 a year have.
People around us see this pretty picture and think it's perfect. We're not perfect.
But perfect should be something you should strive to be. I expect a certain standard. I want us to live a certain way. Julie never gets stressed out over that kind of stuff.
If I did, I would be crazy. Because that's every day.
You need help. You need help.
You can't offer me the help that I need.
I don't know.
This right here is beyond couch time.
Well, and was it his dad who was driving the sizzle reel, like trying to be the showrunner for his family's show pretty much? Or was it Julie? Or was it somebody else? I shouldn't assume it was the parents.
Yeah, so it was definitely Todd behind wanting to have a show, wanting to be on TV.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man. I'm trying to get them on there.
Look,
we all artists, man. We go, you feel me? We gonna have this like,
bro, me and my man Kyle, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now. I gonna lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit serious.
Yeah, that's not surprising. Okay, so, all right, definitely Todd. Okay, so now I really love that you brought up this kind of dynamic about Kyle and the drugs and the mental health, you know, challenges that he faced. I love it because it is intertwined with the dynamics between him and his parents through the years. And mm-hmm. I do think it impacts your story, right? I mean, you know, what I wanted to ask is, do you believe what Chrisley has said in the media about Kyle, which is that he was in and out of rehab like 40 times? That's something Todd said on his podcast.
Yes. So that's true. That's actually true. A lot of those times were before I met Kyle. While we were together, he had been in maybe 3 rehabs over, it's a very up and down story. So like he had a lot of run-in with drugs prior to me. And then when he was with me, he was in a very short sober cycle, I would call it. And then within about 4 months of us dating, I believe on the 4th month, he then relapsed, at which point we did go to rehab. Myself, Julie, Todd, Chase. And then he was totally out of control. The rehab situation didn't go well. And then that's when I believe we were at our 6 month when I was like, this is not going to work. You know, like this was way more than I could chew because it started so nicely. Then it kind of spiraled out of control. And Todd then told me that, and Julie kind of told me, like, when I first met them, that he had a problem. From my background, like where I'm from, growing up, I think I was more sheltered. So my family is Jehovah's Witness.
Okay.
Very sheltered background. So, and we're also from Jamaica. So there's not, there was just no exposure, I would say, to like real drugs. I know about weed. Yeah. But when saying that he's on drugs, I'm like, in my mind, I envisioned it like what you see on TV, like someone with all these needles up on their arm, like tweaked out on the side of the road. You know, I didn't think that someone could be a functional drug addict where you wouldn't know that they're on drugs and they're in your presence, if that makes sense.
Of course it does.
Yeah. So and a lot of people don't believe that. Like, they're just like, how did you not know? How are you with a drug addict? I'm like, even my family that was around him, we didn't know what signs to look for until, of course, he went missing. That was when it was like, oh, my God, he really, you know, where is he? And that's when Todd kind of explained, like, this is the cycle. And again, that's why I believe they have so many things for support for family members with drug addiction. And it's really something that someone from another world has to learn, understand, and know how it works, the cycles of relapse. And I had no idea about that. So in my mind, he was missing. I was like, well, maybe he has a party. Maybe he lost his phone, you know?
Did you have to try to make a lot of excuses for him and fix him? Just curious, because I have a lot of friends that have been with men that are addicted to stuff. So,
yeah. So in the beginning, when he was giving me all the excuses, of course, I heard Todd's perspective, Julie's perspective, the family's perspective. Then I obviously heard Kyle, who at the time I was deeply in love with. So I believed and wanted to believe what he was telling me. So, yes, I was making excuses in my head. Mm-hmm. But I still made that hard stop at 6 months. And that's when he was like, okay, let's just agree. Like, we all sat down and he was just like, let's just agree that we're not going to go to a rehab. I'm just going to stop cold turkey. I'm not going to do it. Just give me this last chance. Like, because after we'd already gone to rehab, things went terribly wrong. And he really did go to cold turkey. So we did that because Todd really is a complete control freak. So it was like, head follicle test for drugs, urine analysis for drugs. He was getting, you know, therapy that he needed. And he really did come out of it. For 5 years, he was clean after that point.
And you were with him during his clean period.
Correct. Yes. So he was clean with me after that first relapse before we got married. And then we got married because he had gone 6 months clean. And then from then on, it was like 5 years of just clean. So, yeah.
And how long were you guys together in total?
We were together in total for 7 years. We were married for six.
A really long time in my world, because I'm from LA. No, I'm not from LA, but I was in LA for 22 years. Same difference. okay. So, wow. That's a really different depiction than I feel like they've put out in the tabloids. Honestly, I'm really glad you're telling this thoroughly. So there was another woman in his life, and her name was Angela Johnson, and she had a baby, which the baby, of course, is Chloe, who people got to know on Chrisley Knows Best. The Chrisleys adopt Chloe later in 2017 from the mother. What did you at all have interaction with Chloe at this time, since that was his child? Or was Kyle just really focused on staying sober and kind of leaned on the Chrisleys with that?
Yeah, so Chloe was definitely in our lives in the beginning while we were still good. So as the public knows, Kyle was on the first season and we were with Chloe. You know, she didn't live with, at the time we lived with Nanny. So I had an apartment at the time that I just sublet out and I moved in with Nanny. At this point we were freshly married or engaged. And yeah, Chloe was around. Even when we got married, Chloe was around. So she stayed with Todd, but we were all in Alpharetta. So I would say she's about 10 minutes away. So we got to see her whenever we wanted, really. And she came by a lot. Sometimes she would just be there with Nanny and myself. And I've even kept her by myself a few times while they were filming. So So yeah, Chloe was around in the beginning with us.
That's nice. I'm glad to hear that. I didn't know that. I knew he was on the first season of the show, though. What happened with that? Because there were a lot of rumors flying around that basically he went on the first season of the show. And then all the media reported was that his dad wouldn't give him his money. And so he then quit the show over that. But I thought maybe it was a little deeper than that.
Yeah. So, you know, Todd is really Todd, like how he is on the show, but just add 2.0. So he definitely held all the funds from Kyle. But to Todd's defense a little, he had an adult guardianship and or conservatorship over Kyle. So kind of like the Britney Spears situation, but worse. Because I don't think her dad is nearly as crazy as Todd is.
I'd say they're probably on par, but okay, that's making a lot more sense, right? So he's in an adult conservatorship. He uses this to control Kyle, probably, I'm guessing, because of his drug addiction. Right? Because many parents, you know, but I'm sure Todd took it to the nth degree, right? Okay. So,
and
yeah.
Before the conservatorship, it was also a guardianship, meaning that the first time Kyle and I got married, I know it sounds funny, we actually got married twice, because it also was annulled from Todd because of that guardianship. So he used it above and beyond in all aspects of Kyle's life, financial, marital, emotional, for medicine, doctor visits, just everything. So it was terrible.
Very intrusive. And I guess he felt that way probably because he couldn't get him off drugs permanently. I've talked to some parents that have had children with drug addiction issues, and they go through so many levels of frustration, right? Like they go from like, I'm finally got him off the drugs, and then they cycle back and they do worse things. And they just, at some point, some parents just completely give up. You know, they're just like, I accept that my kid's going to die. It's really like,
yeah, no, yeah, I was just agreeing with you. I think, yeah, he definitely was trying to help the situation. But like a lot of us in situations where we're trying to help, sometimes we're making it worse.
Absolutely. Yeah. Micromanaging someone could definitely cause someone to actually relapse too. Right. Yeah. So, you know, you never know what people's triggers are.
Right.
Were the drugs he was doing crack cocaine or what? And I'm asking only because it was mentioned in the press. So I'm just trying to set the record straight so everybody understands what severity of drug we're dealing with, because drugs, you know, can range.
Good question. So Kyle was doing crack cocaine. But his drug of choice, I would say, was meth.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. So he was doing crack as one addiction, but not as much as the crystal meth.
Correct.
Okay. And crystal is extremely addicting for anybody who is out there that doesn't know what it is. It's usually you snort it. It's very inexpensive. If you snort it, you just need a tiny, tiny bit. It'll keep you up for 3 days. You can, you can function on it. No problem. People won't know you're on it. Except maybe that you lose a ton of weight, you get very thin, you can't eat on it, you'll skip meals. People tend to skip meals when they're on crystal. It can make you very artistic and kind of OCD about stuff. Like you could clean for 6 hours on it. People do. There are people who take it and they actually will clean a whole day. Some people will do art on it. They'll paint. Like, and the end result is they think it's like a masterpiece, but it's garbage really at the end. Like that's the problem with it, because what happens is over time, your body performs less and less as you become more and more sleep deprived and you don't have REM sleep. And so you start off being like, you know, an optimal performer, let's say would be, you know, remember crystal was developed for the military. It was developed to keep fighters fighting longer, able to stay up longer amounts of hours, feeling invincible, loss of fear, so they could be better warriors. And so it can make people feel invincible and fearless. But what happens is your body and your brain deteriorate over the days, and you actually think you're performing at a super high level, but you're not. It's like your perception is off, and then you will sleep for days. So you sleep for, you know, 24 to 48 hours after, and you have to go hide to do that, or you eat, like you binge eat, which is another thing that happens. It's crazy, but it is a very hideable drug. Well, how do I know? Because I've recreationally used it. I never got addicted to it, but I knew people who did, and it was a slippery slope. So I'm just saying, I want the listeners to know what it is, right?
I'm so happy that you clarified that. Yes, because, you know, that was one of the things that the judge said to me at the divorce that I'll never forget. And I just thought about how uninformed we are, just as a nation and just probably as a society where, like you said, drugs are so misunderstood. She said to me after the divorce, and I, you know, got everything granted. It was actually not even divorce. It was the motion to set aside the divorce. That's a whole nother story. But she said, you know, I'm so happy, you know, that you've come forth. And, you know, I've defended so many things that they were coming against me. Himself, Todd, is his witness in court. But she said, I believe you. I'm happy for your journey. She awarded my attorney's fees at 50%, but she did end it with, I just don't believe, the only part I don't believe is that he could have been on drugs and you were unaware of it for that long. Well, you know, before this divorce. And of course, I just said, okay, Your Honor. But like you said, it is not that easy to tell, you know?
No, it isn't. Because actually, he would have managed his dosage. He would have managed it. What he would have done is said, I know if I just do, this is how it gets. When you know a drug, you'll say, all right, if I take it in the morning, and I take just like a pencil head, that'll get me through, and it won't make me too high where I'm jittery, or, and I might be able to still sleep around 3 a.m. if it's just that much. Like, that's how it goes.
Yeah, exactly. And he was like that. Kyle is very smart, very, you know, calculated, and he had it down to a science. And it, I mean, like you said, I would have said that too, if I was on the outside where I was, like what the judge said, that was where I was beforehand. Like, oh, he's not on drugs. That's impossible. He's missing because he went, you know, to see friends. Like it's, you don't know that there are a lot of people walking around that's probably working with us, friends of yours that are using it, and they're functional.
Of course, truck drivers used to use it to stay awake and truck drive.
And that's what he did. Right. So he worked for. Yes.
Oh my God. He's a truck driver.
Yeah. Now he's a full-time truck driver.
That's why he's got addicted to meth. When did he start truck driving?
He started to, well, he was actually just a UPS delivery driver, but the hours were long. You know how UPS delivers till, especially Christmas time, sometimes 9-10 o'clock at night every day. And they do overtime and double, you know, all that stuff. So he started UPS once he got cut off from the show. So we had, you know, no income. At this time, we're 21. I was still in college. I was graduating that year, and I started a part-time job, a job that I'm still at today, 10 years later, and I'm a senior. But I was just part-time at the time, and I was just doing, you know, answering calls. And so we had to figure out a way to survive and to live. And he worked. He, you know, I helped him get his resume together, and he started. My mom had a friend at UPS and got him an interview, and he started as a first package handler, and then worked his way up to driver. So he was a UPS driver for a better part of 4 years.
So Lexi, I looked it up really quick, and it used to be a bigger problem like 10 years ago, truckers trying to stay awake because they would be bonused if they got deliveries there sooner. In fact, it still appears to be somewhat of a problem, but much less because there's huge consequences if you're caught doing it, but also trucking companies have limited those bonus programs because they realized it was incentivizing the people in the wrong way. But I did find this one study. It was done by a law firm. It said, the recent study reveals that cocaine use among truck drivers may be an underreported phenomena because the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration testing procedures do not include hair tests. The U.S. Department of Transportation may be culpable of underreporting the number of truck drivers using harder substances like cocaine. Prior to 2020, the FMCSA clearinghouse data revealed that marijuana was the main substance that truck drivers tested positive for during pre-employment drug screenings. However, in 2020, the University of Central Arkansas discovered an additional 58,910 truck drivers that would have tested positive for cocaine use for hair testing procedures been incorporated in the drug screening process. According to the American Addiction Center, drug use among truck drivers is relatively high because truck drivers must stay awake for long periods of time. Some of the common drugs of choice are cocaine and amphetamines. In fact, 30% of truck drivers admitted to abusing amphetamines in a study conducted by the American Addiction Centers. In regards to alcohol use, American-based truckers held the highest frequency of positive alcohol tests nationwide. In addition to cocaine and marijuana, truck drivers also abuse substances such as methamphetamine, heroin, and opioid. Truck drivers abuse these types of substances to help stay awake while working their shifts. In some cases, truck drivers can even abuse ADD and ADHD medications such as Adderall and Ritalin to help remain awake behind the wheel. The strenuous nature of the trucking profession contributes to the high frequency of drug use among truck drivers. Prior to the pandemic, truck drivers were required to travel for extended periods of time across the nation's highways to deliver cargo at a specific deadline. This meant that truck drivers were required to forego rest and routine schedules to meet their clients' needs. With the need for specific cargo expanding nationwide since the pandemic, truck drivers are expected to spend additional time traveling and transporting cargo for even longer amounts of time. The longer shifts behind the wheel lead to truck drivers turning to drug substances to self-medicate.
Because you were rewarded on that type of scenario, like the sooner you got the item to a place, a lot of truck drivers became users of crystal meth as a way to be able to keep driving so they didn't have to sleep and lose time. So that's where that comes from. So it's possible that Kyle picked up or increased this sort of recreational play around to a higher level because he started to using it to function more for the purposes of his logistic. And then now he's a trucker.
Now he's a real CDL trucker. So, yeah, I don't know what his usage is, but I don't even know if he uses it. But yeah, he's actually a trucker.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Like, I'm just floored because like that's an industry where it's well known that was a problem.
Oh, yeah. I later found out through other UPS drivers that were friends of his that there was a lot of drug usage going on. No surprise there. And you would think UPS drug tests, but they really don't. So
no, I totally, this is making so much sense now. I mean, yeah. I'm just like, wow, okay. That was a huge epiphany I had. I got excited, sorry. Okay, so I mean, I just like to really understand something, you know, because people like to be like, well, he was broken, so that's what happened to him and we'll put him in that box. But there's always so much more to the story. And I think it really helps people to hear the more because, you know, it can happen to you. And everybody put your judginess down for a second.
Another thing, like all of his rages and things, like for the record, were only when he was high. So those, like he was mellow. If you saw like the years in the media where there were normal articles coming out and none of the crazy drama and all of that, I could speak for when I was with him. The only time that he got into rage, even when it came to me, when it came to his family, when it came to others, was when he was under the influence.
I'm going to bring this, I'm going to blow your mind in a minute, but let's continue at this timeline because I don't want to confuse people. So why does he leave the show? What is your take on him leaving the show in season one? What was it that triggered it?
I would say 75% was probably because of me. Todd just couldn't get with the fact that we got married. He was okay with, like I said, me being there, living with Nanny, helping him through the addiction part, getting him clean. At this rate, he was clean 6 months. Todd had repeatedly said on record to my mother, to my family, to my father at the time, who has now passed away, that my son has never done this well. I don't know what Lexi's doing. She's just so good with him. And he's just transformed, which he did, and he was fine. But he just didn't want us to get married. And so that was a rebuttal effect. So he had annulled our marriage. So we fought that. We started to go under that guardianship to speak with the attorney because, you know, legally Kyle is awarded an attorney as a ward of the state. And so, because he had no rights, and that attorney explained to him, and I became so close to that attorney. He's amazing, to Cleve Hill, if he's listening. And he actually went to the same college as me. So we have a great connection there. But yeah, the attorney explained the rights and the laws and didn't see anything wrong. And we fought it and was able to get married legally. And it was like a 6-month crazy process. And in that time.
So Todd Chrisley was like, what about the marriage to you?
Pretty much like, if this is what you want to do, you know, she's not going to be essentially accepted as your wife. She's not your wife. And legally I wasn't, because it didn't last. And he was just really nasty and just didn't want, like, he was so sweet prior. And then that kind of changed it. And so it's like, all right. And then he was like, y'all could just do what y'all want to do, but she's not going to be on the show. She's not going to be acknowledged. She's not going to be posted on my page. She's not going to be your wife. So y'all could do it, but, you know, she's going to sit in the background. And Kyle was like, okay, no, because this is, you know, this is just crazy. And this is what you try to do to control. And it's just a sense of control. He just didn't want to, I don't think he wants any of his kids to be married. Honestly, he didn't like Lindsay's husband.
So why do you think he's so anti-marriage? What's at the basis of that, in your opinion?
Well, it's just the true signs of a narcissist and a parent that wants to be in charge of all their kids and want their kids to rely solely on him. So if they get married, that, you know, they lose that. You know, if you look at Savannah's relationships, I don't know of them personally. I only knew of her early ones when I was in the family, but it just always seemed to end. When it goes to, you know, Chase, I don't know what he's doing, but it just, every woman, every girl, and I've had thousands of hours of conversations with Todd. This is all on record. Everyone knows, just even our text messages that I still have, over 5,000 messages. And he just didn't like any of his spouse, his kids' spouses at all, or girlfriends or boyfriends.
I have to stop the interview for 1 second because I am reminded at this moment, and I don't say it, but I'm thinking it, that Savannah said on her social media when her parents went to jail that she was going to literally put her life on hold, that she wasn't going to date any boys, she wasn't going to get married, she was going to put all her big life events on hold until her parents got out of prison. And I thought that was very strange at the time, but now it's starting to make a lot more sense to me, especially since Todd is looking at, you know, 11 years. That's a long time to put your life on hold, right? For your parents. So I had to share this with you guys because as I was editing the show, I'm like, that makes so much more sense now. That I know this, right? All right, so let's get back to the interview.
Do you think it was because of this TV show image he wanted to put forward that he didn't want you to be on the show and other people to like ingratiate into the family because it would mean that they had to be on the show? Is that like...
Yes, he wanted the fame to be all about himself. So if you can watch, everything with the show is just him, his ideas, his agenda, his everything. And yeah, he did not like to bring people in to get any shine or I think it's just an image. He just wanted to be the main attraction. That even goes for his own, even his supporting cast. He was very clear he wanted to be the main person, and he was, but it just came at the cost of a lot of people just being talked down to or just not included.
I think Todd convinced himself that his family was a brand and kind of lost touch with reality because he was popular, very, very popular, huge fan base, right? So I think what happened was he started to not look at his family like a family anymore, like regular people that are having relationships and problems. And he started going, we're a brand now. We have to... I have to protect that brand. So I'm going to control who everybody's dating and what they do. And if something happens with someone negative, I'm going to control that narrative. This is a very real thing for reality stars. They totally lose reality. They can't distinguish between the TV show and their real life. It's like they merge and everything is about the show. Everything. Like they can't go to the bathroom without it being without the, you know, about the show. They can't stop talking about the show. Everything they do, their whole life is about the show. Like I'm going to the mall next week. I'm going to go buy something because I'm going to do it for the show.
No, that was definitely, it's almost like it got amplified, right? When the show started. But even when you think before Kyle, like Angela, the women before, Lindsay was married long before the show. I got married to Kyle before the show even aired. So it was, it might've been right like the month it aired, but they didn't know how big they were going to be. They didn't know if they were going to get another season. They only signed them for one season because they didn't know how it was going to do. So he was just crazy like that even before. It just, like you said, got worse when the show came. Now he had an excuse to attach to it. And it was like he was always controlling, but then he kind of made it even more controlling. And I think he also made it to where he could easily, because of the show, cut off whoever he wanted to and move on because he felt he had the show, which I don't think he would have done that without the show.
So I've been pretty fair, I think, to Todd Chrisley and Julie Chrisley up to this point. I want to talk to you about your take on something, okay? And we're going to get to the voicemails and all the stuff. I'm sure everybody's dying to hear me talk about that with you. But I want to talk about Lindsay Chrisley for a second. Now, Lindsay's made amends with her parents who are in prison right now. And she's talked about that on her podcast. But I want to read you something from the past, okay? Just to have your take on it, because this is still floats around in my mind. And I'm just like, what the hell happened here? So maybe you know, maybe you don't, but I'm going to read it anyway. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is from Reality Blurb.
Okay.
It says Reality Blurb somehow got a hold of like an official report that talked about, you know, Lindsay and Todd's fallout that they had. And it says the report continued stating Lindsay became angry with Todd and told him he needed to stop and that he needed to tell Chase to stop because I guess Chase was harassing Lindsay at some point. Todd told Campbell that she needed to be careful with Chase because what he had, she did not want to mess with. Todd said that Chase had a sex video from a puppy cam of Campbell that he bought for $5,000. The sex tape in question was unknowingly taped without Lindsay's knowledge and recorded by a puppy cam with a romantic partner, Robbie Hayes. Lindsay told Todd it was a crime to sell a sex tape, but he only replied with, quote, it's not criminal, maybe civil, and allegedly warned Lindsay to just be careful, the report read. Lindsay and Todd were estranged for years due to his intimidation techniques and began calling Lindsay a, quote, snake and harassing her as the federal case mounting against him began to grow stronger. In the FBI interview documents that were taken during 2019 in Atlanta, Georgia, Lindsay recounted a heinous blackmail attempt that Todd tried to use against her in order to get her to speak well on his and Julie's behalf amid their legal woes. Lindsay claims in the interview she and Todd met in Chattanooga, Tennessee restaurant, and she believed the meeting was for Todd to, quote, apologize for his ill treatment of her. However, she soon found out that that was not the case, and there was a more threatening motive behind her father's actions, also involving her younger brother, Chase Chrisley. Once in the restaurant, Todd told her that he was going to be indicted for conspiracy and tax evasion, and it was going to be bad and all over the media. Todd questioned Campbell about her involvement in all of this, the report read, referring to Lindsay by her married name, Campbell. Okay, so do you know anything about this?
Yeah. So that's pretty much how it went. Lindsay was an amazing sister-in-law. She struggles like Kyle for that. Any child wants that affection from their parent, right? Especially their father, who has other children, who treats, you know, them differently than the other from the previous marriage. So
Lindsay and Kala from the previous marriage.
Correct.
So essentially, Lindsay and Kyle are the ones that have had the really epic problems with Todd and Julie, right? And those are from the previous marriage. So that's an interesting pattern.
Right. Yeah. So to not, you know, it's all out there in the article you just read, right? Like, that's exactly what happened. And I think the fact that she went to the federal government, a lot of the things I learned actually when I saw the indictment, like, I know she'd went to the feds. She told me she'd went to the feds. She texted me when things were going on, but I didn't know the detail and I didn't know what she exactly told them. And she told me about the sex tape, but I didn't realize it was to the degree. So I feel like when the whole federal case came out and how she was a federal witness on the witness list, I was totally in shock myself. I knew she reported her father. I had also gone to the FBI, and when I met with them and I spoke with them about the cyberbullying and things that he was doing, harassment, text messages, all that. And afterwards, the feds told me to send it over. And I didn't have the courage to. I didn't do it. I felt like he's already gotten indicted. So I just need to wait and see how it plays out, which it did play out. So when I saw what happened with Lindsay and that she actually followed through and sent all the, because I knew, like, once you send all the evidence, that's it. You know, you're on record and now you could be a witness, which she was. So long story short, she did all of that and that did happen. And the Chattanooga, all that happened. So yeah, I think in that moment she did what was best for her and what was best for Jackson, and that's what happened.
Well, I mean, it's to her credit that she could forgive her dad for, you know, threatening to release a sex tape of his own daughter. I mean, that's next level. It's next level. Yeah. I mean, even if you're facing going to jail and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe my kid threw me under the bus. Can you blame your kid for telling her truth about, you know, what she witnessed? You know, I mean, I know there's like some mobster, you know, mentality, like it's the family, we stick together, but you're supposed to teach your kids right from wrong. You're supposed to teach your kids, you know, don't steal, don't do these things. And I mean, I do hear parents say, well, if it was my child, I would, you know, hide it, die for him. It would never come out. And I get that, but not the other way around, you know, not the child to the parents. That's like, that's off, right? I get the parent to the child, you know, you do anything. You're like, I'm going to die for my child. So, you know, forget the law, forget whatever. I get that like headspace, but to expect a kid who you're supposedly very Christian and religious and all this stuff, and you're teaching them all this good from bad and wrong from right. And, you know, you're preaching like biblical stuff everywhere, to expect them not to do the right thing and contact the FBI. And by the way, break the law, because turns out, if you don't tell when you see something that someone does that you think is a criminal act or, you know, a misdemeanor or a felony, and you don't tell, you've broken the law. From me. I know, because I had a situation like that.
Oh, yeah, me too. And that's why I'm so surprised that, you know, she's lucky that she's even out and free, because, you know, switching up the story like as many times as she has, that is serious. And especially when the FBI, when the law is involved, you have to tell the truth, especially when you're under subpoena, which Kyle and I were.
So did you approach them? Okay, so people are obviously taking your story and kind of getting it jumbled. Okay, so you we're going to send your cyber messages to the FBI about the harassment, but you didn't. Did you report him to Georgia or to the federal government, or did they come to you? Like, who went to who?
Yeah, so they came to us. How it started was through a journalist. So, you know, this is a popular family. And the journalist worked for the news. I want to say Channel 6 News, one of those big news channels, NBC. I don't remember anymore. But it was a big news channel, and they had a huge headquarter in Atlanta. And she reached out. Her name was Jody Fleischer, and she reached out to us. I don't remember if it was myself or Kyle at the time. We shared the same Facebook account. But she asked for our number and called and wanted to do a sit down about this ongoing investigation. By this time, we'd seen that the state of Georgia, so it hadn't gone to the IRS level or federal level, of course. They were working on it in the background, but what they were running on the story was just that Georgia, the state of Georgia, is investigating their tax evasion. And so Kyle, you know, we called the number and you know, she was like, come down to the headquarters, and we went. And then after the meeting, she had all these, you know, federal questions, like things that had already been, I guess, exposed in the news. If you'd watched the news that week, it was just running back to back every day. And so Kyle responded honestly. Like you said, he was being honest, and we had the Georgia Department of Revenue officials there, but we'd not formally met them. So then she left a business card and said, they really, really want to talk to you guys. So you need to give them a call. And she left a business card. So by this time, it was already an investigation. So there is no, you know, Kyle and Lindsay and Lexi went to the feds, and no, it was already out there. They were coming for family members. Chase knows that they approached him first. Of course, he stayed loyal to his father, but they had already been coming for family, and you have to respond. Now, whether you respond truthfully or lying, that's a different story, but we decided to be truthful, and Lindsay was truthful as well, and it just didn't it didn't work out in his favor, but they already had what they needed. I believe the things that Kyle and Lindsay only could have possibly told, like some of the stuff that came out, they couldn't have possibly known. Like if you read it, like I always say, it sounded almost like a Ponzi scheme. There's no way your kids could have known that degree of fraud that was going on. The things that Kyle and Lindsay attributed to were things like there was no Florida residency. You know, like they had a house in Florida. They had many houses. They had a house in Nashville. They had a house in, you know, Georgia. They had a house in South Carolina. So they had houses all over because obviously they were pumped up with all this money. And so there was no residency in Florida. They gave situations of things that went down in Chrisley Asset Management, the real estate firm in which Todd worked, and the kids worked there as well. So things like how they lost their Fannie Mae contract. I think it's called Fannie Mae. Is that the right name for the real estate company?
Fannie Mae is the lender? It's a lender.
Yeah, so Fannie Mae was there. That was how Todd got, quote unquote, rich, was the Fannie Mae contract. So he got it like an exclusive real estate deal with Fannie Mae.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm listening. I'm just listening to you.
So there was just no need to have lost that deal due to his fraudulent activity. Like he had enough money that he could have just stayed on that. There was no need to. That's why everyone was so shocked that actually knew Todd, that actually was around Todd. Myself, family, you know, his other distant family members, because to do what they did to get more and to connive and do all those things just made no sense. It was just, you know, just greed.
Okay, so I found an article, Law Late News, that had a quote that described Fannie Mae and what Chrisley was doing with that. And it says the following, it's from 2014. Todd Chrisley and Julie Chrisley, according to Julie's own public documents, started in 2005 Chrisley Asset Management. The Georgia-based company, according to Julie, would take Fannie Mae properties and make a commission
on their refurbishing, Todd's company would, quote, upgrade and repair the Fannie Mae properties, then sell them. And then Chrisley Asset Management would be paid a commission by Fannie Mae. And so this was the legitimate business that Chrisley could have made a lot of money, but he decided to be greedy.
Well, I'll probably tie it back to the show because he probably kept feeling like he had to top the previous season because the show was like a life raft. Without it, he was really in trouble, right?
But this all happened before the show. So remember when
he first- it did.
Yeah. So remember, I was around before the show. This was nothing. So he literally came on the show bankrupt. Remember, he'd already filed bankrupt.
Wow. I forgot. That's right. Like my timeline's askewed. So essentially he was running all this illegal activity before the show existed.
Before. And so the show was the cover up, right? So he knew he had to come up with a new hustle. Because at this point, Fannie Mae had caught on. He lost the contract immediately. His place got shut down. The partner that came out as a gay lover, we don't know if that's true or not, but that's the story.
You think about it? Just give me your quick opinion. Do you think Todd Chrisley's bi? I mean, what do you think? Your opinion only. I know you can only speculate.
Yeah. I mean, from my speculation, I truly believe Mark that there was a relationship. I don't know why he would make that up. You know, it's not something normal people would make up. And I believe based on the verdict as well, that the whole jury, everybody that was there believed Mark. He was the star witness. And then thirdly, we know about Kyle's article long before all of this came out about plenty of, you know, bisexual tendencies that Todd did with Kyle just growing up, jokes and people around the office. So yes, I believe that it happened. So yeah. And I think more will come out on that. I know Mark hasn't said much since the court date, and we didn't, you know, there's no audio of how, like, what everything went down, right? We just kind of got like a snippet of what happened. I believe it.
So now let me just say something to the listeners at this point. When the FBI comes a knocking and or you go in front of, you know, state officials or government officials and they ask you to come in to talk to you, you have really only two options, and that is to tell the truth or to say nothing at all. And I believe that everybody in the Chrisley family wanted to tell the truth because it was the right thing to do. And I don't believe that they saw it as throwing their dad under the bus necessarily. I think they just wanted to tell the truth because, as you mentioned, Lexi, you know, asking whether your dad lives more than 6 months in Georgia isn't a big question. You know, it's like a yes or no question. You know, I do think that you have to tell the truth at that point, right? Because exactly. What they're trying to establish is that for you guys who don't know, if you live in certain states for certain periods of time, you're allowed to live by those state rules in terms of taxes. So for example, in the state of Florida, you wouldn't, if you're a resident here, you don't pay state taxes. You only pay federal taxes. So a lot of people really love to be residents in Florida, but you're not allowed to exploit it. You're not allowed to not really live here and then do your taxes in the state of Florida because you got a house here that you go to once a year for a month. And you're really living in California to like ditch your California state tax, which is high. That's not supposed to happen. And if they catch you doing it, you get in a situation like with what happened with Todd and Georgia.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. So that's just on the state level because Todd, by the way, ended up settling with the state of Georgia. Wasn't it criminal for the state of Georgia? Or do you don't remember?
It was civil on record, but criminal was also being looked into as well. Yes. Both were being investigated. He was being fully investigated with the state. And they did. Yeah, you're right. He was able to settle with the state.
He was able to settle. Basically, his argument was, I can justify all of the arguments I made in my state tax returns and, you know, for different things that I feel like you misunderstood. And he went and he told a clear version of his accounting. And they agreed that there was only a discrepancy of $150,000 and he agreed to pay it. But then, of course, the federal charges came.
Right.
And the federal charges were on something else. It wasn't being cutesy with the taxes. It was about taking money from mortgage companies and falsifying documentation in order to get loans. And then basically, like you mentioned, Lexi, robbing Peter to pay Paul, which is essentially a Ponzi scheme. So, you know, or Tom Girardi, another famous person recently who was doing a similar tactic where he would take money that didn't belong to him, you know, should have been allocated to certain expenses, and he would allocate that money to those expenses, but they were really for something else. And it gave the illusion that he was actually paying his bills and doing things on time and, you know, making money for people and paying them their money. But that wasn't what was happening. It was an illusion designed to keep being able to get money somehow. And so the same applied for Todd Chrisley and Julie Chrisley. And oddly, Julie Chrisley was actually more culpable than Todd. Did that surprise you?
Not at all. Not at all.
Come on, bitch, let's go.
Well, you know I'm going to stop it there and leave you on a whopping cliffhanger that maybe Julie Chrisley was the mastermind. Wouldn't that be something? Not the little bumpkin we all thought. Well, you're going to have to wait till next week's episode to hear Lexi's take on whether that is the case and Julie really was the driver of all things or not. And she's also going to share the really scandalous voice messages she received from Todd Chrisley when he was trying to bully her into submission. And she's going to explain the whole story around that. And from that, a huge thing comes out that nobody really knew. And she tells the whole story and even sent me proof, which I will be sharing in the Patreon. See you next week for part 2.